Unless there is a sudden and miraculous change, polar ice will continue to melt and sea levels will rise in the foreseeable future. So now what to do with all those things we've built near the ocean? The state of California is using federal grant money to study the likely effects of sea level rise on state transportation facilities, highways and bridges and more. And there are opportunities for the public to take part in the process with a series of meetings starting this evening at the Warfinger Building in Eureka at 6 o'clock. This is a climate change vulnerability assessment study. Three guests join us to talk about this. Rob Holmland is a planner with GHD, one of the consulting firms involved. Rob, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Alderon Laird is with us as well, an environmental consultant at the Humboldt Bay Sea Level Rise Adaptation Planning Project. Hi, Alderon.
Hi.
Hi, and Lewis White is with us as well, an engineer with ESA, Environmental Science Associates. Hello, Lewis.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Rob, would you tell us how this process got started?
Sure. In 2008, the Federal Highway Administration realized that a lot of transportation infrastructure is vulnerable to various potential impacts of climate change. And so they developed a preliminary methodology for how to analyze the vulnerability and then develop adaptation strategies for transportation infrastructure for everything from sea level rise to increased precipitation, increased temperature. And that was about 2007. Then they put out a grant program in which 40 counties along the Gulf Coast and four states applied for the grant and won, and they developed, they built on that methodology to see in the Gulf Coast region what types of transportation infrastructure were vulnerable to the various climate change factors. And of course, there it was primarily sea level rise. And it was a really big project, lasted for 2 years, and at the end of it, they submitted the results back to the Federal Highway Administration, who then revamped their methodology and then submitted another round of grants, and they went back and forth this a couple of times. And then just last year, Caltrans was one of 19 recipients throughout the nation, Caltrans District 1, which we're currently in, which is the four northern counties on the coast of California, to refine this methodology farther, explore how our transportation infrastructure here is vulnerable to climate change, and then to develop strategies and adaptation methods for dealing with those anticipated effects.
Now, Alderon Laird, this is an area in which you're well familiar, I think, because you've gotten a lot of experience with looking around the Humboldt Bay area to see what the sea level rise would do.
Yeah, we've been studying the local conditions on Humboldt Bay since 2010, just to see what areas might be vulnerable to sea level rise. And we found that based on the historical land use practices of diking off salt marsh and reclaiming those areas for agricultural uses, that if those dikes aren't maintained, then all those lands that were formerly part of the bay are susceptible of being reclaimed by the bay if the dikes fail.
Which means then either there's going to be a lot of dike maintenance or a lot of not dike maintenance, it seems like. I mean, you can't do it halfway.
No, you pretty much have to do it all the way, and there is a huge lack of maintenance because of multiple property owners of the dikes. They're not held by any one agency, and they haven't been maintained. And we've been seeing breaches occur each year during the king tides in different areas. In fact, we just had a breach about 2 weeks ago on the wildlife refuge property where 50 acres of former tide lands were reclaimed by the bay.
And once they're reclaimed, it's kind of hard to get them back, I guess.
Yes, once they're part of the bay again, it's pretty difficult to repair the dikes and reclaim the lands for agricultural uses. Much of those lands have compacted about 3 feet over the last century that they've been diked off, so they're actually lower than they were when they were salt marsh, and they're much lower than the bay is today. So the six-mile reach between the city of Eureka and Arcata that we're studying is built on former tide lands, and the highway in many places is lower than the bay right now.
So, Lewis White, you're the engineer here. It seems like there'd be a real trick to trying to figure out how to assess what effects would be, not just on transportation systems, but on a lot of other things, because it's hard to predict what the other choices will be, the other variables in deciding where you're going to keep high water out, where you're going to let it in.
Yeah, that's right. As part of the study, we looked at a whole range of climate effects you know, from temperature changes, precipitation and rainfall, storm events, and as well as fire risk. And then I think what we've been hearing here is, most importantly, sea level rise and coastal erosion. And there's been a number of studies that have already been completed which have assessed the impacts of sea level rise on the coast. And so what we've done is use the information to compare with the proximity and exposure of the highway assets to these this amount of sea level rise to assess the level and degree of vulnerability that the roads are, how much are they threatened by this amount of sea level rise and erosion. And if they are vulnerable, that is just a flag that, hey, we need to consider how are we going to adapt to these types of changes. And and we've located several miles of shoreline and road that is may be threatened by sea level rise. And so the team is narrowed it down to a series of a few, four different locations that we're looking at in more detail. And
we're talking about a climate change vulnerability assessment study for parts of the North Coast funded by the federal government. Caltrans got a hold of the grant for this. Rob Holmland, Alderon Laird, and Lewis White, our guests. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with comments and questions. 800-838-3760 around the region. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So Alderon's experience is primarily with Humboldt Bay, but Rob Holmland, as Lewis White just indicated, we are talking areas not just including Humboldt Bay, right?
That's correct. In fact, we have a meeting that's tonight in Humboldt County, but then one tomorrow night in Crescent City at the Elk Valley Rancheria Community Center starting at 6 o'clock. And for the Del Norte area, we're concentrating on the roadway known as Last Chance Grade, which is a segment of 101 that's atop a coastal bluff that is slowly eroding into the ocean, and sea level rise could exacerbate that and can make it a lot worse. Then we have Lake County. We're looking at a stretch of Route 20 by Nice and how increased precipitation and the severity of precipitation events could flood a segment of roadway there. And then we're also looking at the Garcia River area around southern Mendocino right on the coast. Route 1 and its vulnerability to flooding.
So just to get the meetings listed once again, we're talking tonight in Eureka at the Warfinger Building. These are all starting at 6 o'clock, run till 7:30. So tonight in Eureka at the Warfinger Building, Crescent City on Tuesday at the Elk Valley Rancheria on Norris Avenue, Lakeport on Wednesday, and Thursday in Fort Bragg at the Mendocino County Library Fort Bragg branch. And what's the basic structure of the meetings?
We're going to start off with a general presentation about what is climate change, how do we know what we know, then what is generally vulnerable in District 1 as far as transportation infrastructure and how is it vulnerable. It's really easy to think about sea level rise, and it's the factor that gets the most attention, but there's also good research to indicate that increased temperature up to a certain threshold can start to threaten asphalt and transportation infrastructure. And I think you know, an important thing to keep in mind is that, you know, bridges and some transportation infrastructure, when designed and constructed, is designed to last for 75 or more years. And so this study is relatively unique in that it has a very long planning horizon, and that we're looking at the years 2050 and 2100 and how transportation infrastructure will be affected in those two timelines. And so when you're thinking about temperature change over the course of 75 years, it could be that transportation agencies locally might need to think about redesigning their pavements to anticipate increases in temperature. There's also increases in precipitation, so perhaps culverts and bridges need to be sized and designed differently now, anticipating what the world could be like 75 years from now.
Lewis White, does it allow you to look far ahead in the sense of not just what the existing structures are, but if you had to move them, where they would go to? Is that even part of this study?
Yeah, well, we're looking at a high level for how to adapt to these different types of climate change impacts. And we're developing a way to look at a methodology that we can go through to assess, well, if there are certain types of impacts, what is the magnitude of the impact, and we look at different degrees of adaptation. Are we going to hold the line and protect this and possibly rebuild this again in the future, or are we going to raise it above the critical flood elevations, or are we going to just reroute completely? And so our methodology considers a whole range of approaches for how to adapt. And it's important at this stage to keep an open mind, to include alternatives that, although they may not appear as the best alternatives right now, they might as we move forward and go through the analysis and evaluate the results.
Do you end up with dollar figures, essentially price tags for what would have to happen in scenario A versus scenario B versus scenario C?
I think in a very very preliminary and conceptual sense, we might have some degree of economic impact of the different alternatives.
Well, Ron Laird, you had mentioned earlier. Go ahead, Rob.
I didn't completely answer your question about how the public meetings are going to go. So we're going to be looking exactly what Louis was just talking about, is preliminary adaptation strategies, a range of strategies for each of the four locations, as well as potential costs, and not just economic costs, but social and environmental costs and potential benefits. And so, like Louis said, it's a pretty big picture at the moment, but the study is really about developing a methodology so that Caltrans and other transportation agencies can evaluate this methodology for how to consider what climate change could do to their infrastructure in the future.
Alderon Laird, you mentioned king tides earlier. I want to get back into that and tell us what those are, because those are a bit of an indicator about what happens if sea levels do continue to rise, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They're an extreme annual tide that usually occurs October through January for a couple of days each month. And on Humboldt Bay, they average about a foot higher in elevation than what our average monthly high tides are. So if you want to see what 1 foot of sea level rise it looks like, we've been going around the bay and we've identified a number of locations that are really visible for looking at these high tides. And the communities come together and helped photograph the King High Tides for the last several years. And we've been posting those photographs online at the Humboldt Baykeepers website if you want to see those. But in 2005, the New Year's Eve storm surge that we had in high tide, it was actually a foot and a half higher than our monthly high tides. And the governor declared a state of emergency on Humboldt Bay. So it's really an excellent teaching tool just to show people what our local community looks like with these extreme high tides.
It looks very different, doesn't it?
It looks quite a bit different. What you realize is that all of the dikes and the railroad structures that were built over a century ago, they built those to be above, you know, the annual or king high tides of that era. Well, those high tides today are much more frequently reached, and our 100-year event today in the future will become the average king tide, too.
So, Rob Homeland Alderon just mentioned railroad facilities. Are those included in this climate change vulnerability assessment study, or is this primarily highways, bridges, highway maintenance facilities?
It's exclusively Caltrans facilities throughout the district, but inevitably some of the railroad infrastructure protects the highway, and so to a large degree we're going to have to evaluate those, and we're currently in that process. Where the railroad protects the highway, we need to look at, you know, the railroad as an option for adapting. But in general, this methodology that we're developing and that we're expanding on from the Federal Highway Administration could be applied to the railroad throughout the district, throughout the nation. It's a methodology that can be applied to any type of infrastructure.
Louis White, as we talk about changes in things like potential changes to road surfaces, I mean, are we talking about potentially building bridges differently out of different materials as well to factor in some of the changes that are coming?
Well, that's one thought, and I imagine in areas where heat is very important, such as the deserts of Southern California, that discussion's already going on, and they already have different types of asphalt concrete that they've developed, that Caltrans uses for their roads. And from our results for the District 1, most areas aren't going to be severely impacted by changes in extreme temperature, primarily the inland locations in Lake County and the far inland reaches of Humboldt County may experience some increases in extreme temperature, but probably not to the degree that we're going to see a lot of different materials developed just for managing climate change. However, we have a lot of material engineers out there in the world doing research looking at new materials, and we'll probably see different types of approaches for constructing roads and bridges in the future.
All right. Again, this is a climate change vulnerability assessment study. I want to thank Louis White, Alderon Laird, and Rob Holmlin for joining us. The meeting's again tonight, August 25th in Eureka at the Warfinger Building at 6, tomorrow night, Tuesday, in Crescent City at the Elk Valley Rancheria, Wednesday at Lakeport at the Lake County Courthouse, and Thursday in Fort Bragg at the Mendocino County Library, all those starting at 6 o'clock. Gentlemen, thank you.